This is Rock Isn't Dead, It's Just Sleeping. With your hosts, William Whitebread and Mark Audio Slave Stewart.
Hey, welcome back, motherfuckers, to another episode of Rock Isn't Dead, It's Just Sleeping. With me, as always, the Willie Whitebread, Mark the Audio Slave, and our beautiful third co-host, Delta Drew Pearson.
Follow the lead. What's up, motherfuckers?
What
up?
What are we doing today, guys?
I don't know. What are you doing today, guys?
I think I'm going to do something about the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
That's right. So in the essence of talking about influential and unique bands that have, I don't know, sort of escaped the musical industry as we know it today, I think we will talk about the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
This is a good one.
This is a good one.
I like it a lot.
So where are we going to start with these guys? They have such a diverse past, and they're very unique. One of the reasons that we chose these guys, obviously, is because we love them. And another reason is because I haven't heard another band like them.
Exactly.
Well, they're mixing the funk with the rock, with the
Metal.
Yeah.
With soul. The jazz, yeah. With the soul. It's like almost a melting pot of genres.
Yeah. And I don't know why. For some reason, whenever I listen to the Red Hot Chili Peppers, I feel Faith No More or In Living Color.
Don't forget Beautiful. About the rap element, because there's a lot of rap element going with Anthony Kiedis and his vocals.
Yeah. And that was his bass line. You know, obviously, that was his bass line was, the rap. You know, because he rapped and he brought blending of punk and funk. Yeah. To the music scene, and that's really neat, I think.
And you got to give a lot of credit to George Clinton, because George Clinton kind of put them out there.
Right.
You know?
Eventually, yeah. So, and another thing that I came across when researching, because my Red Hot Chili Peppers knowledge, I'm not going to sit here and lie and say that I'm a Red Hot Chili Peppers aficionado, that's more you guys, but
I'd say that.
I didn't know that they actually started in the early 80s.
You didn't know that, dude?
I did not.
You're stupid.
You're stupid. No, I didn't know that. So previous, I thought Mother's Milk was the pièce de résistance. That's where they started, late 80s style stuff.
That's kind of where they took off.
That's where they took off, sure, but that's not where they started.
No.
It's not where they started, but it is where they did take off. I mean, you asked the question, where do we want to start off with? I would definitely say Mother's Milk. I mean, every band starts off early, just like, you know, Tool or Rage, but I mean,
right.
That's where they really took stride was Mother's Milk, basically.
Mother's Milk, that was a good record. They so we're talking about, when we talk about the Red Hot Chili Peppers, we're talking about an L.A.-based band, early 80s. Now, let's think about, before we set the pace for Mother's Milk, what was going on in the early 80s? What was the music scene like then?
It was punk. It was, you had a lot of punk
in the rock
and roll scene.
You had thrash metal primarily going on in L.A. as well.
You had MTV kind of just starting up.
Right.
So, I mean, everybody was kind of all eyes on the tube.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Everybody was watching whatever was on MTV.
Right.
So, exactly. So, I mean when you got to figure, when MTV first started, there wasn't any kind of Headbangers Ball. There wasn't 120 minutes.
Right.
I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, but those were kind of the alternative and the metal shows. Eventually, the Chili Peppers made it onto those shows. But at first, it was kind of just it was pop music on MTV. So MTV was if you were going to be making it big in the music industry, you had to be on MTV.
Right.
Back in those days.
Exactly. And so that's what I'm saying. They were formed, and especially coming out in 83. Cause so you had punk rock come into fruition in the late 70s. They started moving underground in the early 80s. And then it started paving the road for the thrash metal scene that was happening in the early 80s. We've talking about the Big Four. We're talking about Slayer. We're talking about all those guys, Metallica, Megadeth. So for a funk punk band to come out was a pretty unique thing. That was a very unique thing.
I totally agree with
that. Yeah, and for a band to last as long as they have, to have you know, they've gone through a few different drummers and guitar players.
You know, their funk kind of got them famous, but then they kind of moved away from it a little bit in their latter years.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. So when they first came out on the scene, well, first their original name was Tony Flo and the Miraculous Majestic Masters
and
of Mayhem.
I knew
I was going to fuck that up.
I would too.
Yeah, and their original lineup, like I said, they've transferred drummers and they've transferred guitar players, you know, quite a few times over the years. But their original lineup was Hello Slovak, drummer Jack Irons, and you guys probably heard about Jack Irons because he did some work with Pearl Jam in the later years, and he also is the reason Pearl Jam was Pearl Jam because he was the reason that Stone Gossard found Eddie Vedder.
Mm.
Yeah, Jack Irons.
I did not know that.
Jack Irons. Awesome. Stone Gossard from Pearl Jam, after Mother Love Bone went down, Stone Gossard reached out to his friend Jack Irons to see if he knew of any frontmen, and Irons used to surf with Eddie Vedder.
And that's crazy. When Eddie Vedder sent his tape in.
Sends his tape nice. Through Jack Irons.
That's pretty sweet.
So, okay, so everybody can kind of recognize Jack Irons. And then obviously you have got Anthony Kiedis, who is the frontman and my favorite member of the band for more than one reason, Flea. Because Flea, even if you don't know who the Red Hot Chili Peppers are,
right?
You've got somebody, you know, 16-year-old Valley girl doesn't know who the Red Hot Chili Peppers are. She's heard of Flea.
Absolutely.
He's
the baseline of them. I mean, literally speaking.
Because of his outlandish antics.
Absolutely.
And his name is so catchy.
Correct. And how many people do you know, how many bass players are more notorious than him? And I'm not talking about, because he sings too, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a couple songs, really not that many.
Right, but still he does.
Yeah, he has his moments.
But he's
an
amazing.
He has backup vocals a lot.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And he's an amazing, amazing bass player. Yeah. He's fantastic.
Oh, dude, one of the best top 10 bass players of
exactly.
all time.
Exactly. His funk bass is to rock and roll what jazz chords are to a great rock and roll band.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It adds that edge.
He's an artist. He's also an actor. He does all kinds of shit.
Yeah. Exactly.
He's a badass motherfucker.
Mm-hmm. And he's really into helping kids learn music and instruments.
Which
and,
is awesome.
And yeah.
Isn't he the reason why they wear all that crazy shit? You know?
Yeah.
Like the Suck My Kiss.
Well, I think Kiedis and Flea both had a hand in all the craziness, like you know, how they dress and stuff.
And that's another thing. That's another edge to the Red Hot Chili Peppers that made them famous is they're not only great musicians and pseudo masters of their craft, but they've got the shock value.
Yeah.
They've got something that sets them apart, like the Socks on Cox tour where they, I mean, this is a very common occurrence to see the Red Hot Chili Peppers play naked. They did it all the time in the mid-90s, early 90s.
Rage followed suit with that as well, didn't they?
Right.
Really?
I do believe so for a Lollapalooza tour.
Okay. That's right.
Okay.
And so you've got these guys, they're artistic, but motherfucker are they eclectic. They are all over the fucking place, especially Anthony Kiedis and John Frusciante, which we will get into in a moment. So
they just want to be noticed.
Right.
You know.
So the Red Hot Chili Peppers, they started, Flea and Anthony Kiedis were the original members of the band, right?
Yeah.
And Jack Irons and Hillel were in another weird band that they were wanting to get big. I think it was called like What Is This or something like that.
Right.
And in there, if you listen, like if you go on Apple Music or wherever you listen to music, you can look up the Red Hot Chili Peppers and you can see their first three albums, you know, their self-titled album, Freaky Styly. And Anthony Kiedis doesn't really sing. I know he's very known in his, in their middle, like, you know, Californication and those kind of albums. He's known for his melodic singing, but when they first started it, that wasn't the case.
No. He was kind of like only noticed for his rapping. Yeah, because it was different. You know, back then there was nobody else doing it.
Maybe, right.
Especially in a funk rock band.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's how they started gaining notoriety because Anthony Kiedis in the early 80s had written a poem called Out in L.A.
So they
and
all,
he began rapping.
They all kind of hooked up together in Grand Rapids, Michigan, they were 12 years old. You know,
high school.
Yeah,
school.
12, 13 years old, probably eighth grade. So, like, you know, Kiedis and Michael Bowsery, which is Flea, and Slovak. You know, they all kind of hooked up together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they met.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's right. And so, so you've got those two guys, Anthony Kiedis and Flea, are the main members of the band. They're the ones that'll stay from beginning to end.
Exactly.
And like I said, Slovak and Irons, who the original guitar player and drummer, they were in another band called What Is This, and they were pseudo helping Flea and Anthony out by playing with them. Like they, because the Red Hot Chili Peppers, if you listen to their earlier stuff as well, they were very much a jam band. There wasn't any polish to their music.
Absolutely.
They were a jam band.
Absolutely. A lot of punk influence. I would have to say it was a different style of music. Yeah. Also with the funk, nobody sounded like them at all.
Yeah, they were totally unique.
Crazy lyrics, crazy music, and that's what made them who they were and who they are to this day still.
That's why they got noticed at such an early time in their career.
Yeah.
You know, by you know, big record producers and stuff like that. Because of their, you know, their different take on the whole music, you know, genre that they're doing.
Thus again, getting back to Flea. Flea, in my opinion, is probably the headliner of this band.
I would agree.
Dictates it.
Yeah. Well, he's been the only constant as well, because as we'll go on in a little bit of detail here shortly, Anthony Kiedis and John Frusciante, they both went through very large and intense and extensive battles with drugs, heroin.
Well, let's start with Anthony Kiedis and Flea. Anthony Kiedis, in particularly, his father was a drug dealer. Okay. Boom.
Yeah.
And at age 14, his father introduced him to marijuana and cocaine.
Right. Hell of a dad. Thanks, Dad.
And that's kind of what took him on his drug rampage through life.
Right. Exactly.
That's what Slovak died from, was an overdose.
That's right.
Heroin.
Right? That's right. Yeah. But that came a little later. And so, okay, so you've got Flea, Anthony. They're jamming with Jack Irons and Slovak sometimes. They finally, their manager, Lindsey Goetz, signs them to a 7-album deal with EMI.
Perfect.
Right? And this is early on. Like, if you go back and listen to these original records, they are so fucking different than anything I've ever heard.
That's fantastic. It's 7-album deal.
Right off the rip.
Crazy.
So they knew that there's potential in these guys. They released their debut album in August of 84, which sold a lot more copies personally than I think it should have, 300,000.
Yeah.
And with the help of college radio stations and, as Mark previously mentioned, MTV, they started beginning to gain some underground notoriety.
Right.
Right? Because I can't stress this enough, guys. If you think you know who the Red Hot Chili Peppers are, you've got to go listen to their first three albums and listen to the difference in style and music and how much. Talk about a band that has grown. I mean, mother of God.
You got to figure, too. They were super, super addicted to drugs, especially during the first two albums. I mean, that second album, or even the third album, is where the record guys gave them $5,000.
Yeah.
And then they said, okay, well, we're going to take $2,000 and spend that on cocaine and heroin. Yes. Like, what?
So yeah.
I'd say Higher Ground off Mother's Milk.
Yeah, that was the first.
That's kind of like their first.
Really started flourishing. Going.
Yeah, that was their first single. I remember, like I talked to you guys offline about a little bit ago, the first time I heard the Red Hot Chili Peppers really was in the first live action Power Rangers movie.
Dope.
Really?
When watch that movie, it's actually a pretty funny movie. And like the first 15 minutes, it shows them jumping out of an airplane and Higher Ground is playing.
That's fantastic.
And it's hilarious as shit. And they also went through a lot of scrutiny with their producers, right? So their first album drops, and then they get a different producer, a band called Gang of Four guitarist Andy Gill. And what he was wanting to polish them into, this is after their first album. Now they're going to record their second album, Freaky Styly. They wanted to make him, Andy Gill wanted to make them a singles band, right? A hit band. They wanted singles, and that is not what they wanted. Right. They wanted to be a jam band. They wanted to be famous for being a jam band. They loved being a jam band. Yeah. And they did not want to stray away from funk.
Yeah, I was just going to say the funk was very important to them.
Right. And so they released their second album. Right. And they're also another producer on this album. Was George Clinton.
A motherfucking man.
Motherfucking funk master flex, George Clinton.
Awesome.
Who actually kind of refined. Greatness. Yeah, he realized greatness, and he sort of polished those beautiful elements of punk and funk and allowed them to express it.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
I think. you know. And so, yeah, that's when you were talking about when they started spending the money on drugs. This is when Anthony Kiedis started getting pretty deep.
Making that fucking money, man.
Yeah, making that money.
Well, it wasn't just Anthony Kiedis. It was their producer. The producer was addicted to drugs as well. Yeah. So he was trying to serve Keith himself. Keith Levine. He was, yes. Yeah. Keith Levine was trying to serve himself as well as the band.
And that was an EMI producer. That was with the record label.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. A major record fucking label. Man.
So Mother's Milk, this is when we introduce John Frusciante as well, correct?
Yeah.
After George Clinton. So
yeah, after George Clinton, after Freaky Styley, then they released a third album, The Uplift Mojo Party Plan. They actually, funny thing, they tried to hire Rick Rubin to produce that album, but he was like, I ain't fucking touching that stank. Rubin was like, not yet. Not until y'all get your shit together.
Absolutely.
So,
hey, real quick. Did you guys know that Flea was actually a member of a bass player for Jane's Addiction?
No.
Yeah, he was.
Really?
Very briefly, he was Jane's Addiction.
In the beginning?
That's how Dave Navarro came into the picture.
That makes more sense.
Yeah.
It does.
That makes more sense.
Before the Chili Peppers got together.
Okay, I get it. So that's how they're close.
That's how they all got close, yeah.
Yeah.
Another great band.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty good. And so in the third album's recording, this is when, like we talked about, Anthony started getting real bad into drugs. But this is when he started getting real bad into drugs.
Yeah.
This is when he went to rehab for the first time in Michigan with
his
mom.
Flea wasn't a fetching angel. I mean, they don't talk about him much, but Flea was also doing all the same shit.
I mean, look at him, dude. Like,
I mean, yeah, he's talked about it. You know,
yeah.
You know, Flea grew up in a horrible environment.
Mm.
Stepfathers, so like the biggest alcoholic family his mother and stepfathers could ever possibly be for him.
Right.
You know, he started off playing trumpet, and then he graduated to the bass. But but it's kind of like Kiedis. That's why they had their common bond so early in life, because you know, they were both coming from horrible, horrible housebroken family.
Yeah. And it's funny too, because like you said, if for them to not mention Flea, I mean, how bad must Kiedis have been for them to not even mention Flea?
Well, because Kiedis, I'm sure, was kind of like constantly running off out of the studio.
He was.
Where Flea was like, I'm good.
He was. Well, they fired Anthony Kiedis for a brief time in between the second and third album.
Yeah.
When he went to rehab.
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously they got back together, you know, and all that. They made up Kissed and Made Good. They released the Uplift Mojo Party Plan, which was their first album to actually peak. It made it to 148 on the Billboard 200.
I don't know how.
Me neither. It's a fucking bad album, dude.
It's horrible.
I'm sorry to any of you like vintage Red Hot Chili Peppers fans, but their first three albums, man, I just can't get behind it.
I could not stand it.
Yeah, I can't.
I mean, certain parts of it was like okay. But then most of it was kind of just like, holy God.
Well, this is going to set the tour, like set the tone for the next. This is when we're getting to when Red Hot Chili Peppers actually started. So Slovak, he actually, their guitar player, their original guitar player, died of a heroin overdose June 25th, 1988. Not long after one of their tours, the Uplift tour. So
I'm not saying this to be a dick, but I'm saying this because it's kind of for the best. Because otherwise they wouldn't have come with John.
It's when fate sets in.
Yeah, right. Fate set in.
Right.
And John stepped in.
Right. And this is also when Jack Irons left too. Right after Slovak died, Jack Irons left because he's like, I'm not going to be in a band where all my fucking friends are dying. Because he's looking at Kiedis and he's like, this motherfucker's next.
Correct.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to be a part of this fucking spiral, dude. I'm out.
Yep.
I'm fucking out.
That's for sure.
You know, okay. So let's move into post 88. That's when we're starting to get into the Mother's Milk stuff. Right. And this is, I know Drew's itching right now.
This is John Frusciante's first album.
Yeah, Drew's itching right now.
So let me explain one little thing about John Frusciante. So John Frusciante, he was taking lessons to become a guitar player, and his actual teacher was the one who introduced him to the Red Hot Chili Peppers, because his teacher was like, I'm gonna go audition for this band called the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah.
And so he's like, oh, cool. And then so he like followed up and like listened to them, and he was like, oh, dang. So he, you know, a couple months later, actually auditioned himself. But before that, he was going to their shows, and he was outside, and he was talking to Anthony Kiedis, and he was talking to Flea, and he was like, you know, getting in with these guys.
Right.
And then he auditioned. And then guess what? He got the fucking part.
Right.
You know, because he's a badass guitar player. He's a natural.
Yeah.
You know?
And so in the in-between, before John Frusciante got picked up, you've got... Slovak's replacement for a minute there was Blackbird McKnight. They had him for just a brief time. And then also, the guy who replaced Irons was Dead Kennedy's drummer, D.H. Peligro.
Absolutely. So they were the record label they were on.
Yeah, exactly. And so, but this was for a very short time. Obviously, McKnight.
But they were really good friends with Peligro.
Yeah, and they were very good friends. McKnight, he was just a kind of an in between. And this is the thing that you'll see throughout the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And this is something I really respect about them. You can see this throughout their history. Is they're very big on chemistry. Like, you've mentioned this a lot, Mark. Like, you can't have a successful band if you can't stand being on a tour bus with somebody.
Correct.
You know, and so they were very big
about
on
that.
Yeah, and they were very big on chemistry. So they fired, Blackbird McKnight very, very shortly after they hired him. And as Mark said, then they picked up John Frusciante.
I think they even talk about it as well, very much so about the chemistry. I think they all talked about it.
You have to mesh with the people that you're going to go on tour for a year or 18 months with. You know, you can't just, you know, and it's not only about that. It's as you have to be, you know, meshing well in the studio and sounding well as well.
How long are these guys obviously have something right, because how long they've been doing this shit? Over 35 years?
Long time.
Yeah.
35 fucking years?
These days, yeah.
Right.
Frusciante's sound is so perfect and unique for this band.
Dude.
He sings. It's like he's singing and talking with them while he's playing.
And something, exactly.
Yeah.
And something interesting about John, too, is, you know, if you listen to Red Hot Chili Peppers songs, you can hear the guitar and you're like, you know what, that doesn't sound that complex. But go sit down there with some sheet music and start playing some of John Frusciante shit. He changes keys on a fucking dime.
Yeah.
The dude's chord changes are perfect.
Yeah.
He's a classically trained guitar player, John Frusciante.
Yeah.
And at a young age, too, he was, what, 18 when he joined the band?
Yep. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
He was a fucking sprat.
Yeah.
And he was a monster guitar player.
Oh, it just screams. He just screams
he kills
with that bass. With
and
Flea.
He's beautiful.
It's perfect.
Him to his key and chord changes is what David Gilmour is to pentatonic scaling and slides.
Interesting.
Now this is just
seriously,
me, and maybe Will.
Seriously,
would
he's
agree.
Top 10 guitar players for me. John Frusciante.
Oh yeah, easily,
absolutely.
One of the best players of all time.
Interesting.
Except when he went solo.
Yeah.
I mean, he had this itch that I have to go solo. I can't play this the same stuff with the Chili Peppers all the time.
Yeah.
And you know, and I try listening to it. And I swear, you know, he was just coming up with so many great, you know, orchestrated, like, you know, tones,
instrumentals
with the Chili Peppers. But then when he went solo, it was kind of like it was flat. It was kind of like, I don't even want to.
Well, he lost his chemistry.
That's mother's milk, in my opinion. It's just they were barely peaking it.
Mother's
right there.
Milk, right?
It was
mother's milk
there.
Was good, but it wasn't. They weren't there yet.
Right. Well,
but
they were polishing it. You
but
know,
Higher Ground. Obviously,
it's a great song.
Was the best song on the record.
It's a great song.
Okay, so Johnny kicked the hole in the sky. You know,
and I think I testify,
kick a hole right in the sky. Yeah, that's a great song, yeah. Johnny.
It is.
Mark's got to sing a fucking power ballad
Johnny.
Now.
It's not a bad album. There's
a bunch of good songs on that album.
And I also think it's important, like we talked about. I think it's important for a fan. And I think it's cool for a fan to be adopted into a band, because then you have it from both sides of the thing, both sides of the spectrum. You've got the band's chemistry and what the band wants to do, but you also have somebody outside looking in telling you what other people want to hear.
And that's where the producer came in.
Like Corey Taylor with Slipknot. It's an awesome thing.
Their producer came in and was like, listen, we need to make a hit. We need to make it, you know, so that you guys are going to be making, you know, a number one single. You guys can't be playing this funk bullshit all the time. You got to come up with something great. And that's what the people were, you know, the producer during that time was saying. And I disagree with it because they were just trying to like find themselves.
Lyrically, that's where it started getting. That's what makes them heavy is how Anthony Kiedis starts singing in that on that album.
Well, yeah, he
starts,
found himself.
He's starting to use. Am I sorry to say this, but profanity. It was a stickered album.
Yeah,
it was just real. You felt it. It was starting, and then you getting into the next album.
And he was kind of finding himself.
Right.
On Mother's Milk, he was finding himself.
Right.
And by the next album, he kind of like, he was like, oh, this is what the fuck's
exactly.
up. This is what's up.
And so when they picked up Frusciante, they didn't immediately start working on the next album. They had started going on tour. And they also fired Peligro due to his drugs and alcohol problem because they were trying to clean up their shit. You know what I mean?
Supposedly, Flea stayed in bed for like 7 days.
Yeah.
Because he was so distraught.
Well, they're great friends.
Well, I mean, they're from a major band, a major label.
Right.
And
that goes back to how much respect you can have.
It's a really hard thing to do.
Right. And that goes back to how much respect you can have for a band for making those types of decisions on the fly like that.
Yeah.
That's intense, right?
Yeah.
And so now they're drummerless, and then they're going to pick up next their band lifelong drummer from this point on, from Mother's Milk on, Chad Smith, had showed up late to the audition, and Anthony Kiedis looked at him. He's like, oh, this guy's fucking square, and he's a monster, 6'3", and he was a metalhead.
Total metalhead.
That's another different aspect to add to their music. Chad Smith, their drummer, is a fucking metalhead. So now you have a screaming drummer. Yeah. A badass, classically trained jazz guitar key changing powerhouse, John Frusciante.
True.
A screaming fucking funk bass player.
Go on.
Yeah. Damn, I want to talk about it. Come on.
And a badass fucking vocalist.
And then the vocalist who just found himself.
Yeah, he's starting to find himself because you're not going to hear Anthony Kiedis even fucking sing a note until Mother's Milk. You know what I mean?
But you're not going to hear him express himself truly and so Blood Sugar.
I'm not going to deny it. The energy is starting to grow when it comes into Blood Sugar Sex Magic.
Oh, my God. Yes, man. It is. Yes, it is.
Absolutely. And so they, you know, they're doing their tours. And, you know, after their success in 1990, they had great success with Mother's Milk. You know, better success than they have had. They sold 500,000 units. It climbed to number 33 in Australia, number 52 in the U.S.
Was this album number 2 or 3 for the contract that they signed?
What are you talking about?
For the 7 albums.
I think they signed their 7 album contract with EMI the second album.
Second.
So this is 4?
This will be the 4th.
Interesting.
Yes, this will be the 4th coming in. So, going back to what we talked about with Rick Rubin. So, now...
Fucking man right there.
The man Rick Rubin from Warner Brothers looks at Red Hot Chili Peppers. They get them out of their EMI contract. They sign with Warner Brothers, which is fucking huge. Huge label. Even still, huge label.
So, we haven't released Blood Sugar yet.
No. Okay. No, we're starting to work on Blood Sugar.
Okay.
We've got Rick Rubin. We're signed to Warner Brothers. We've got all these badass musicians that are masters of their craft.
Right.
And we're getting ready for a fucking A-bomb.
And anybody doesn't know who Rick Rubin is, look him up.
Yeah.
He is...
he bridges the gap on badass fucking producers,
innovator.
Man.
He is a badass.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So they go to start recording their 5th studio album. They spend 6 months recording this album, and Rick Rubin picked things up immediately, and he says, these guys, because they started recording in like a very clean-cut, nice Buddy Holly-type studio-type deal, and they're like, these guys aren't going to vibe with that, because like I said, going back, chemistry's everything, vibe is everything, and these guys are a fucking jam band.
Well, Rick Rubin didn't want them, they wanted Rick Rubin to be on Mother's Milk. But they were too fucked up on drugs.
Right, yeah.
And Rick Rubin said, fuck off. I'm not doing it.
Exactly.
Until
now.
The next album.
The next one. Now he's got them. And so Rick Rubin invites them to stay at his house, a.k.a. the mansion, which is also said to be the prior living quarters to Harry Houdini. So they're all living together, mm-hmm. right? They're all recording after 6 months. Except for Chad Smith. Yeah,
they said, "Oh, Chad Smith was afraid. He was too afraid to live in the mansion because of the ghosts."
They said there was ghosts.
But then Chad Smith later said, "He's like, well, that's not true. It wasn't because of the ghosts. It was because I wanted to go home and spend time with my wife."
No,
smart man.
So he came home every day. He came up on his motorcycle to record the album.
So they spent 6 months in this unorthodox setting. They're living together. They're eating together. They're recording together. They're getting shit done, which is what Rick Rubin wanted. He wanted to keep them together. He wanted to keep an eye on them.
Yeah.
And he wanted to keep them working.
Right.
Because if you don't, Kiedis is going to fucking float out the front door and go start banging smack again. So
he probably still was.
He probably, yeah. So September 1991, the really, really powerhouse album, Blood Sugar Sex Magic, is dropped.
Hands down,
my favorite
top 50 albums of all time. Oh,
dude, easily
top 25.
Easily. Yeah. So the third song on the album, Breaking the Girl, that's one of my favorite Red Hot Chili Peppers songs ever. Period. And you also got to think, like we talked about, inherently and in the past, Anthony Kiedis is a rapper. He was, well, he's not a rapper, but he rapped his lyrics because he wasn't comfortable singing.
He was the godfather of rap rock.
I right.
mean, he was the biggest influence for Linkin yeah. Park and
Link, exactly.
Limp Bizkit.
Exactly. You know? And so he's now found himself. He's now singing. And let's look at the singles we have on here. We have Breaking the Girl, third track. Fifth track, Suck My Kiss. That's a fucking powerhouse song,
yeah.
right?
Oh, yeah.
And then number nine, you've got Give It Away, which is another powerhouse song.
Which was their first single off the album.
Yeah, and they released also, that a little early, yeah.
Also, that whole solo was in reverse. I mean, you haven't, since the Beatles, you really haven't had anything that's been in reverse like that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that was just, that was their first single, and that was their powerhouse single of that record.
John Frusciante, man. Fucking badass. And so then you have number 11, which is probably one of their most notorious songs of all time, Under the Bridge.
About drug addiction.
And it's funny because there actually is a bridge, but Anthony Kiedis will not reveal where that bridge actually is.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's all about Anthony Kiedis and doing heroin underneath that bridge and drawing blood and all that shit.
It's like, to refer to this album, when you hear Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon, you have to listen to it from mm-hmm. front to back. All right, Led Zeppelin 2, you got to listen to it from front to back.
Yep.
This album is front to back. Nirvana, never mind, front to back. It is that influential. I have to listen to every single
song. I totally
song
agree
on
yeah.
this album.
And they have fucking a bonus track. They have a bonus track at the end. It's you know, the Red Hot, which is a Robert Johnson cover.
Right.
Fuck yeah.
Which brings it back because it ties it up right. So you've got Anthony Kiedis singing throughout the whole album. You've got his melodies. You've got all these guys doing this badass shit. And at the very end, they have this cover, and it brings it right back to that funk rap.
Okay, but during that time,
right,
they were thinking, what should be the name of the album? And it was a great track. It was probably one of the best tracks out of the top, you know, five tracks on that album, Blood Sugar Sex Magic.
Oh, yeah.
So they said, that kind of sums up everything. Yeah. Blood Sugar Sex Magic. Let's just name it that.
I remember I had a shirt. I had a Blood Sugar Sex Magic shirt in high school.
You said, what was your favorite track on that album?
My favorite track, Breaking the Girl and Blood Sugar Sex Magic.
What's yours?
Blood Sugar Sex Magic and Suck My Kiss.
Sir Psycho Sexy for mine. And I would have to say The Righteous and the Wicked. It's just they break it down in a heavy...
You just want to be different.
No, The Righteous and the Wicked is a
Sir best. Psycho that's, Sexy is no, just
a
bad.
That's a good
the Righteous
song.
And the Wicked is one of those songs, you know, on that album that's an unheard, unsung song that, you know, it should be talked
it
about because
it
wasn't a single.
Yeah.
It wasn't a single, so that's why it's not heard of. But
yeah,
so heavy.
It's such a great song.
Yeah, this album is one of those, like, that I'll stray to, like, a weird dimension and buy a first press vinyl for. I'll only buy a first press for, like, a few different records.
It's gonna fucking happen.
And I'll buy a first press Blood Sugar Sex Magic. So, like we talked about, this is when they hit. They really hit. They got the highest on the Billboard charts that they'll ever get. Number two. Under the Bridge got number two. And that's the highest they'll ever get is number two.
Sucks.
Yeah, and it sucks, but that's it. I mean, they were so unique. They didn't fit the spectrum.
They were just starting.
How many times have you ever heard a band like, you are way better than people think you are, but they didn't fit the spectrum?
I would have to say you too.
Yeah.
I would say U2, people didn't understand U2, but when they started hitting that, you know, I what was that? A buddy of mine said it earlier today when they played that live show downtown in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. you know, and they had all the cops and shit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Changed them, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This album is influential.
Right. So you got number two on the Billboard Hot 100 charts. You've got over 12 million copies sold. Rolling Stone magazine set them number 310 of the 500 greatest albums of all time.
When were they inducted to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
I have no idea. I think it was like 2013 or something.
Not too long ago.
But it wasn't that long for a band that hasn't been around for that long. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of other bands that had to wait like 30, 40, 50
years. Oh, yeah,
years.
Like bands from the 60s and shit that didn't get inducted.
And then Chili Peppers is kind of like, oh, 23 years? Eh, induct them.
Right. Well, they're so diverse, man.
Well, they had so many hits. Right. They had so many, you know, after Blood Sugar Sex Magic, what was the next album?
Californication?
No.
No? What was it?
After Blood Sugar Sex Magic, it was One Hot Minute.
Was it One Hot Minute? It was One Hot Minute.
So, okay.
They released,
here we go.
That's
they
right.
Released a
John
couple.
Frusciante Not only Anthony Kiedis had a horrible drug addiction, but John Frusciante had a horrible drug addiction. So, he had to leave the band.
So they released two singles after that album. One was for Beavis and Butthead's soundtrack, yep. and yeah. the other was for Coneheads. And John Frusciante was not on any of those tracks, dude. He was not on any of them. Then they released One Hot Minute, which
it was Josh.
It's another one of my favorite albums.
Well, Frusciante quit.
Yeah.
After a show in Japan in 92 because he couldn't handle the success.
Well, he couldn't handle this. That was the first time he quit, right?
Yeah, this was the first time.
This is the first time he quit. He couldn't handle... He's like, guys, I really would wish that we were only playing clubs. I don't want to play festivals. I don't want to play 200,000 people.
Well, to put it in perspective... That's not what I signed up for. Exactly. And to put it in perspective how big they were at that time. So when they kicked off their Blood Sugar Sex Magik tour, you know who their fucking openers were? Nirvana, Pearl Jam, and the fucking Smashing Pumpkins.
Right.
Were their openers, mind you.
Right, right.
Their openers.
Well, so, they were also the grandfathers of those bands, too.
Right. So. And so now we've got John Frusciante. They've lost him for the first time. And so they're in search.
And secretly, John Frusciante had a horrible addiction to heroin and cocaine at that time. So he was kind of like, I don't know if he was like, you know, getting anxiety over performing in front of 100,000 people,
right?
Or if he was just that addicted to drugs where he just couldn't handle his shit.
We'll never know.
So I'm going to get back to chemistry. So this is where this band starts skyrocketing. They come out with One Hot Minute with Dave Navarro.
Yeah.
I mean, they're riding high.
What happened with Dave Navarro and Jane's Addiction where he left Jane's Addiction and said, you know, fuck it.
I'm pretty sure they just disbanded. And, well, he was deep into drugs too. Dave was in recovery.
Oh, dude, there was talks of where Dave was recording with the Chili Peppers and falling over his fucking amplifier.
Exactly. But
that's where the Chili Peppers started fucking being clean was that album. Dave Navarro was clean for that album. They were as well. That's where I started paying attention to the Chili Peppers.
About that? Because I heard for that album, Dave Navarro was falling over his fucking amplifier. God, practice.
Maybe. Well, he was dabbling. He was doing the Anthony Kiedis thing that Anthony was doing in between the third and the fourth album. He was teetering back and forth. But they reached a final straw standpoint. And Soul to Squeeze was the single, the non-album single you were talking about from
Coneheads.
Hands
down, my favorite song by this band. Yeah. At
Soul to Squeeze.
Hands down.
Mine was Road Trippin' off California. Our Californication.
Very good
road
songs.
Tripping. I love that acoustic intro, dude. It's fucking the whole acoustic set.
I don't blame you.
So anyway, so we've got Dave Navarro, a former Jane's Addiction guitar player that has now replaced John Frusciante, and they are working on their fifth studio album, One Hot Minute. And this is a unique one too. This is kind of a weird album because, as we talked about before, the chemistry and the momentum of the band has always been solely based around funk, punk, right? A little bit of rap overtones.
Right.
Okay? And so what is Dave Navarro? Dave Navarro is not a heavy metal guitarist, but he's a heavier guitar player.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Borderline rock metal.
I'd say he's darker.
Well,
he's darker, yeah.
He's dark rock.
Yeah.
Dark rock.
Yeah. He's not a heavy metal guitar player, but he's just dark. Yeah. That's a great,
dark,
great way
dark
to...
Dark rock.
Yeah, that's a great way.
He's not metal. Yeah. He's just dark.
Yeah. So he joined the band in 93. Navarro's first appearance actually with the Chili Peppers was Woodstock 94.
Yeah.
So he's now people know Dave is in the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Now, as far as One Hot Minute is concerned, mm-hmm. there's only two of the tracks that made it to radio play.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, it was kind of like, you know, it was probably the right way to portray this album. So Airplane, you know, that's going to appeal to a lot of people.
I like that one.
Because it's a pop type, pop rock song.
Yeah.
And then you have My Friends.
My Friends.
Which is another great song.
Great video, too.
But it wasn't as well known as Airplane.
Is that where Flea sang his first song on the album as well?
Flea sang a song called P.
Fuck you, asshole.
Right. Yeah. my favorite song on that album was Tearjerker.
Great song.
Right.
Because that was also written for Kurt Cobain.
I actually thought that Walkabout was a really cool song.
That, I would have to agree with you on that, Mark. That
Walkabout was a good one.
Funky, dark, melodic. Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Fucking just like... It's just a great Chili Peppers rendition of a Chili Peppers song.
I agree.
So that album came out in 95.
95.
I'm just looking. I'm sorry. I'm seeing.
Well, they started touring after that album. They took a slight break for a minute, for a couple of years, actually. and started touring. They did a lot of international tours. They did a lot of Europe tours. They did a lot of overseas tours.
They were tour slaves.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't blame them for turning to drugs because to going on tour for 24 months and then, you know, coming back for a month and then going back on an 18-month tour. I mean, who the fuck in their right mind could actually do that?
You
know? And
so, if I was making money?
Oh, yeah. Well, I could do if you don't have anybody at home that you care about.
I don't know, man. Like, that's...
When did Flea and Anthony have their kids?
Well, I'll put it to you this way. I know what it feels like to be in a different time, to wake up in a different time zone every single day for months and months and months on end. And I can tell you, after about month two, you're literally walking around like a piece of fucking pocket lint. So these guys had to have been worn out.
Without a wife, without a kid.
Young.
Could you imagine with a wife and a kid and
exactly,
a family? I mean,
exactly.
God damn.
I do not know what that's like.
Exactly. And so Navarro departed in early 98. So they spent, what, 3 years touring?
3 years with it.
3 years fucking touring. And after Navarro left, you know, Flea and Anthony, they're all worn the fuck out. They're talking about breaking up the band at this point. And Anthony...
Especially Flea.
Yeah, and Anthony had said something while they were on vacation, Flea and Anthony, and he said, the only way that I could see the Chili Peppers surviving is with John. Yeah. We need John.
Then he came back.
And well, that's funny because Anthony and John, the reason that they broke he broke out off the first time... supposedly it was because John didn't groove with Anthony very well.
Well, that and his drug issues and stuff. So when they were battling sobriety.
So when they did, when before Californication, you know, was in talks, Flea called John Frusciante.
Yeah.
And Flea was probably the only one at anybody who kept in contact with John.
Yeah.
So he called John and was like, "Hey man, can I come over and see you?" Goes over to John's house, apartment at the time. You know, and you got to think about John had just got through a horrible addiction. He had his nose reconstructed. He had veins in his arms reconstructed. He had all the teeth in his mouth taken out and put in with veneers and you know, false teeth and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then so, you know, he was in a rough shape. He spent all his money from his original, riches with the Chili Peppers. So he comes. So you know, and also there was a fire.
And
there
was all his guitars got burnt up in a fucking house fire.
All his guitars got burned down, and so he was in a rough fucking state of mind. So when Flea got over to his apartment, he was like, "Man, I'm here to ask you if you want to come and come back with the Chili Peppers." And he was like, "Man," John Frusciante teared up and said, "Man, there's nothing more in this world that I would rather do, you know, than do that."
Well,
chemistry.
The next hurdle was
chemistry.
Him and Anthony. Getting back together.
I don't think there was much bad blood there, you know.
Well, there wasn't. And you're right. There wasn't. Because once they did, there was days and days upon days that Frusciante and Kiedis had got together to actually get together and perform or to write songs like with guitar and vocals.
Right.
So, I mean, they were the bygones had let they be bygones.
Right.
So I'm going to get away. I'm going to say... totally forgot about the Red Hot Chili Peppers after One Hot Minute for a while.
Yeah.
Then they come out.
Well, I mean, it's easy to do in 3 years.
They come out with Californication.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm shit.
June 1999, man.
I was graduating high school. They come out with this album. It's dope. It was good.
That's one of their best as well, man.
California is coming back.
Yeah. And you got to notice a trend here, guys, okay? And I'm not going to come right out and say that you know, what I'm thinking, but listen to John Frusciante. Red Hot Chili Peppers albums and listen to non John Frusciante.
Yeah, listen to Josh and listen
Red
to
Hot
Dave.
Chili Peppers,
we're getting there.
It's a totally different ballgame.
And Halil, like, listen to these. Okay, so June 1999, their seventh studio album, Californication, gets released, which immediately sells almost 16 million fucking copies.
And not for no reason.
And what did they do very shortly after this got released? They played Woodstock 99.
Great, but let's go into Californication. Let's go into all the hits, okay?
We have
Around the World.
Mm-hmm.
We have Parallel Universe.
Mm-hmm.
We have Scar Tissue, Other Side, Californication.
That was their first release off that, right?
Road Trippin' was on that one.
That's my favorite song on that album.
That fucking album was incredible.
Which one was it? Around the World they came out with first, the first track off that album?
Yeah.
When they released, and then they came out with Californication?
Right.
Or was it Scar Tissue?
No, it was Other Side. Other Side was a big release for that one.
Yeah.
I think Scar Tissue was their first hit off there.
No. Scar Tissue wasn't on there, bro. Oh, yeah, it was.
Were Frusciante's playing the guitar in the back of the car?
Yes.
Yeah. Sick, and they're coming up with good music videos too.
Okay.
At this time as well, they had some pretty sweet music videos.
We are on the Frusciante fucking.
We're on the Frusciante train, right? Okay, so they play Woodstock '99. If you guys want to know about Woodstock '99, listen to a previous episode, the one we just did.
Well, there's one incident where it comes to Woodstock '99. So the stepsister of Jimi Hendrix says to the Chili Peppers, "Please, can you do the rendition of one of my stepbrother's songs?" And so they said, "Okay, well, we're going to do Fire." They haven't done it in years. So what they do? They did Fire. And then guess what? The next day, they got a lot of backlash.
Yeah, they got
all
slammed.
The fires that were started.
I think during that whole thing, we've talked
bullshit,
about it.
That's bullshit, though, that they were, in, you know. Okay, so fast forward.
We've talked
next,
about
next
it.
Next album, By the Way.
By the Way, released in 2002. Another Rick Rubin album.
Yeah.
Another Rick Rubin album. That was a great one, too. They had a few singles on it, By the Way. Zephyr Song, which I'm not a big fan of the Zephyr Song.
I like the Zephyr Song.
Not a big fan of that one. Can't Stop.
Love it.
Yeah. That's a great song.
That's a great song. This is where Anthony Kiedis starts singing. He starts changing. Yeah. He's transitioning.
He's not rap rocking the
but
whole time.
But I like how you can hear the slight hints of his, you know, of his roots and everything he does. Get up, a peek, a peek, a bing, bing. You know, hear the funk and you can hear his rap influence.
I agree.
You know, coming through. But you are correct. They did focus on a lot more melodic ballads as opposed to their classic rap driven funk. You know, funk punk stuff.
Yeah, that's my least.
You know,
I actually like Throw Away Your Television.
That's a good song.
That's a good one.
It's my least favorite album by them. Or I can't say least favorite.
That's not my least favorite.
It's an album I really don't like a lot of.
Really?
It took me a minute to get into it. I still don't like a lot of it. But the album they released after it,
Stadium Arcadium.
They released a greatest hit album in between Stadium Arcadium and
I do own that.
Yeah, but Stadium Arcadium was epic.
Yeah, but Fortune Faded, they released two non new songs on their greatest hits album, which was, you know, Save the Population. I do like Fortune Faded.
Fortune Faded
is a great song.
A good song as
I
well.
I think that the greatest hits album, those two songs that they released that you're talking about had the guy who died, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seventh studio album they released the greatest hits. I like it. That was smart by them.
That was a good move.
Smart move by them.
And so the next one we're gonna look at one of their more famous albums too. And a difficult thing to do in the music world is produce a double album. That's a bold move, Cotton. Let's see how it goes. You know, that's a bold one.
See, I agree, but at the same token, I want to disagree because I'm pretty sure a lot of bands make a lot of songs that are not pressed in an album. Because they have a certain core or to keep it to where they needed to be at. A lot of bands were coming out with double pressed albums at that current moment in time. One I would say that I bought close to it was System of a Down. And these people were coming out with double albums. It was a great move. Smart. A lot of those.
Oh,
albums.
Yeah.
That's where Mark said earlier also got me thinking where Flea started playing the trumpet a lot.
Yeah.
Where he was on the Mars Volta playing the
trumpet. That's where he started though. That's where Flea started. He before the bass, it was the trumpet. That's what he was his passion.
I didn't know that time.
And then, you know, that's why he does a lot of charity work these days with kids that, you know, want to do like band instruments type, not, you know, guitars, bass. He was talking about like, you know, trumpets and violins and stuff. But he wants to do like, you know, he wants to help them out.
But yeah, so that's they released that 28 song double album in 2006.
They trimmed it down though. It wasn't 28.
Well, they trimmed it down from 38.
Right. Oh,
38.
Okay, okay.
That's my point being. Yeah. I'm pretty sure they had a lot.
They had a ton of content.
Their number one single on that album, Danny California, was released, and that was a big hit.
Yeah.
Right?
Snow.
Snow was a really big hit.
Yeah.
But Danny California supposedly was Anthony Kiedis talking to every girl he's ever been with.
Really?
That was his thing about Danny California. It's like, oh, well, you know. And I'm not going to write a song for about an individual girl because Danny California is about every girl. So,
right.
You know.
That's funny.
Yeah.
And so they went on tour for a long time.
Yeah.
With Stadium Arcadium years.
The Wet Sand on that album was a really great song as well.
I like what they did in between, you know, their next album in Stadium Arcadium is a lot of those guys broke apart a little bit to do kind of fun projects for them.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you had Chas Smith doing Chicken Foot.
Yeah, well, he worked with Sammy Hagar.
Super group.
Yeah, Joe Satriani and Flea went and worked with Tom York, a Radiohead, and, and a supergroup, Atoms for Peace.
That's right. Awesome.
You know, and they also, in 08, in between those two albums, they also worked with George Clinton on one of his albums on George Clinton and his Gangsters
Alive. They had to pay homage to George Clinton. They couldn't just, like, leave him in the dirt.
Yeah, and guess what else happened after this album? Fucking John Frusciante left the band again.
Oh, surprise!
God damn it, John.
I got to do my own, you know, solo stuff.
Yeah.
Bitch, you ain't going nowhere solo, B.
Yeah, exactly.
But even though I love it, you ain't going to get nowhere.
Exactly.
He made some good EPs after Californication, I think, or during Californication. He made some good EPs. I like his music.
I'll never argue with his instrumentals. I'll never argue with his instrumental
work.
He's
a great guitar player, but
he's not a great songwriter.
He's not a good vocalist either.
He's not a great songwriter. He's an absolute fantastic instrumental, but he needs a guide.
Now, let's fast forward.
Right.
After Stadium Arcadium, they came out with I'm With You. Now, if you were to talk to me about I'm With You, instead of the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
I'm talking to you.
Instead of the Red Hot Chili Peppers, I'm going to have to call them the, you know, the orange mild chipotle peppers.
The orange mild chipotle peppers is kind of the direction they started
going. That album, I don't want to say it stunk, but it wasn't great.
It wasn't. Yeah. Well, and what's missing? John fucking Frusciante. So they picked up Josh Cliffhanger or whatever, Klinghoffer or whatever his name is.
Again.
And they picked him up and, you know, so let's look at a little bit into their albums after that, right? And another thing that sparked this episode is obviously that the Red Hot Chili Peppers are fucking fantastic, but John fucking Frusciante's back with them again. So we can probably expect something good. So after Stadium Arcadium, we've got I'm With You, released August 26, 2011. It started to get
nothing on this album is going to be like worthwhile talking about.
Yeah, and then they released The Getaway in 2016 with Dark Necessities.
Again.
Yeah.
So, but you know, good news is it's 2020. John Frusciante is back with the band.
Back with the band.
Okay, so they're, and for those of you who are interested in going to see the Red Hot Chili Peppers, their first date is in Gulf Shores, Alabama at the Hangout Festival. During the May Festival of Hangout.
And they're touring with John Frusciante now.
They are.
I wonder if they're going to put out another album with him.
Hey, I mean,
if they do, it'll be gold.
Their history is so long and so great that it wouldn't.
Now, I will say, before we wrap it up, I will say that one of my favorite side projects that John Frusciante worked on, because I'm a big fan of theirs, is the Mars Volta.
Oh, yeah.
He worked a lot with the Mars Volta, and I love... You can hear it, because if you listen to Mars Volta, it'll fucking wake you up like a shot of espresso, first of all.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. So, anyway, that's going to wrap it up for the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I do want to say something real quick before we go to the roll credits fiend, the end. I want to talk about something that happened today that took me very much by surprise, and I want to take a second to pay homage to the great rock virtuoso drummer, the most powerhouse percussionist to ever walk the face of the earth, to ever slap the skins, Neil Peart. Neil Peart passed away on January 7th of brain cancer. And that took me very, very by surprise today, obviously.
I think it was a three-year battle.
It was a three-year battle that they kept very quiet. And at first, when I saw it on social media, I thought it was a joke. And
why
I looked a little bit.
Why would anybody joke?
Well, because you see that shit all the time. Fucking John Travolta died or some stupid shit. Yeah, you know what I mean?
I get you.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some dude, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio jumped off a bridge. But like I looked into it and I'm like, I kind of sat there. I was playing guitar when I was doing it too. And I was sitting there looking. I was like, holy shit, dude. Because that really hits hard, because Neil Peart was literally, and I was going to say you can fight me on this, but no, you can't. Neil Peart was the best drummer to ever live.
I'm going to fight you on that.
I don't think so, man. I don't think so.
That's your opinion. I respect that.
But anyway.
He was a great drummer.
He was
top 25 of all time. Gotcha.
And we're going to do, as soon as we get with Mike Martinez, one of our great friends, we're going to do an episode on Rush, because that in and of itself is an intense episode. So rest in peace, Neil. We're going to miss you, buddy.
Also, let's do a t-shirt giveaway.
Yes, let's do a t-shirt giveaway. So, we're going to do giveaway another t-shirt, and how you get entered for that is you get to go ahead and give the show. We post all of our show links on Facebook. Give the show a share, right? That's one entry. If you share the show and give us a rating on whatever network you listen to your podcast, that is two entries. And before next week episode, we will do a drawing, and we will announce a winner for a new t-shirt. And you guys are going to love it because they're great t-shirts. They're very comfortable. You'll enjoy it.
I love it.
I promise. So anyway, that wraps it up for this week, guys. We love you. We hope you enjoyed the show. And stay tuned for probably 2 weeks, right? 2 weeks. We'll do another one.
Rest
enjoy.
In peace, Neil
See
Perk.
You guys.
Rest in peace.